Good morning. I'd like to welcome you to the February 7th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility Commission, District Commission. Excuse me. I'd like to thank everyone for your participation today and remind you to please mute your screens. And if you are unmuted, to please silence all your electronic devices that you have with you today. Today's meeting is a study and business session with a study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and the afternoon business session starting at 1 p.m. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand to either physically or electronically raise your hand that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes, please. Today we have all five commissioners present, General Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board, are with us today. So this morning, would you please join Stace Knutson in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and a safety minute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands.
It stands one nation
under God.
Under God.
Indivisible. Liberty, indivisible. Justice for all.
For all.
Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Hello, my name is Stace Knutson.
Lead us off.
Pardon? Oh. Hello, my name is Stace Knutson. I've been with the district for 23 years and am a customer service representative. If you're not aware, February is American Heart Month. I know it doesn't sound like a topic for a safety minute at the workplace, but you might find it interesting to know there are about 10,000 cardiac arrests that happen each year in the workplace in the United States. And every year, more than 600,000 Americans die from heart disease. Worldwide, cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death, killing 17.9 million people every year. As one of the number one killers of Americans, heart disease is a slow-moving epidemic that affects almost everyone. In fact, the CDC reports that every 40 seconds someone in the United States has a heart attack. However, this isn't entirely a modern phenomenon. Egyptian mummies have been proven to have had cardiovascular disease. And researchers speculate that high fat and sedentary lifestyles of upper class Egyptians may have contributed to their poor health. This brings me to why I chose this topic. Last year, I received some not so favorable lab results, and my doctor said I'm literally a walking time bomb. I was at risk for stroke or a heart attack, and I needed to do something about it. This was a wake up call for me. And at that moment, I decided I didn't want to be another statistic. So I'll leave you with a few more interesting facts. Heart attacks can be silent. 1 in 5 heart attacks occur without the person even knowing it. Heart attacks affect women differently than men. Women under 50 are twice as likely to die of a heart attack as men in the same age group. Drinking 1 or more diet sodas a day raises heart attack risk by 43%. And lastly, in case you're one that doesn't care for Mondays, here's another reason to dislike them. Heart attacks are more likely to occur on Monday mornings than any other day of the week. This is attributed to increased blood pressure and changes in the nervous system. So please, use this month as a reminder to take care of your heart and start some heart-healthy habits. Eating a healthier diet, engaging in physical activity, or managing your cholesterol and blood pressure. So please, be smart and follow your heart.
Thank you, Stace. Great advice. I hope there's not scientific proof that we shouldn't have commission meetings on Monday mornings because of... someone who has had some bad genetics with heart disease passed down to them, and I was sitting in a movie one time, and I just wanted to share that heart attacks occur for people in different ways. You know, with, usually think of chest pain or pain in the arm or extremity there and left arm. Mine occurred in a movie. My stomach started hurting, and my granddaughter was asleep, and I picked her up and carried her out to the car and had lots of stomach pain, couldn't figure out what the heck was going on, and I went home. My wife said, well, you better just go to the ER room to make sure that you're okay, and so I drove myself to the ER and found out that I was having a heart attack. So anyway, it's good to be aware of that and take care of yourselves. All right. Well, thank you again, Stace. I appreciate that that information. Commissioners, approval of the agenda. We have been presented an agenda. Staff have recommended item 9 for consent. Do I hear any other requests or additions from commissioners on the agenda?
Wasn't item 12 also recommended for consent?
With some feedback, we wanted to hear
hear
that publicly. So,
yeah, Steve, it's Ann.
Go ahead, Ann.
Can you hear me? Yeah. So, yeah, Randy, I just thought it would be good to, since it deals with water rights and the regional water system and you know, water banking, I just thought it would be good to have that before the public again, because there's still a lot of people that don't understand that whole process. I won't be here. Yeah. I'm gone because I have to leave early, but I just feel like we should present that publicly.
Any other recommended changes, commissioners? Okay, so we have an agenda with item 9 being added for consent. Excuse me. Kirk, at this time, I'm going to turn this over to you for introductions and to talk about the introduction of Confluence Parkway in the update.
Thank you, Commissioner McKenna. This is Kirk Hudson, General Manager. I'm happy to introduce the City of Wenatchee, starting with Frank Koontz. So before I let Frank kick this off, I just wanted to share, there's three outcomes we're looking for today. One of them is to provide everybody that's in this meeting an update on where that project is at. And the second one is to acknowledge all the hard work the city has put into this planning effort and mitigating the concerns that they're aware of. And the third is to get the board's approval to begin a public outreach effort, augmenting the city's efforts with the project, that we would do that collaboratively. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mayor Frank Koontz. And I think he's got several guests on the line as well.
Thanks, Kirk. Members of the commission, for the record, Frank Koontz, Mayor, City of Wenatchee. Thank you for giving us some time this morning to go over and update you on what is essentially has been about a 15-year process, if you go back and look at how long it has been that we've been studying North Wenatchee Avenue, understanding the bottlenecks created by traffic, studying different ways to get across the Wenatchee River, understanding that, in essence, the city of Wenatchee is a bit of an island. There's only sort of one way on and one way off, or maybe two ways on and two ways off, but clearly, with the mountains to one side and the river to the other side, really brings us some challenges, both in terms of moving automobiles, pedestrians, link buses, all the other things that need to move both north and south. And the reason you're really hearing from the city is we have sort of been the agency that's taken the lead on this project. This is a project that's a regional it's a regional request. It comes from the cities of Wenatchee and East Wenatchee, both counties, both ports that are now one port, WashDOT, and other agencies that sit on the Transportation Council. This has been the Transportation Council's number one regional ask and request to get completed for the last 10-plus years. So a lot of work has gone on to this. I will tell you that projects of this size have issues, and you'll hear about some of those today. I encourage everyone who's sort of listening to both look at, let me get rid of my phone there, to both weigh the pluses and the minuses. You know, there's improvements to the Apple Capital Loop Trail. There's improvements to the bridge over the Wenatchee River. There's lots of really positive things with respect to moving link buses, the electric buses that they're running. And there's a whole bunch of really positive things that come from public safety being another one. So I just encourage everyone to sort of look at it from all angles, which I'm sure you will. We've got Laura Merrill will be taking over from the city here in a little bit. All of our consultants are on board. And then ultimately, I think, not immediately, but, the ask of the city will be, in the next 45 to 60 days, authorizing your general manager's signature on a letter of concurrence that we can then add to our NEPA paperwork when we send that in for final approval from U.S. Highways. So with that, I will turn it over to Laura Merrill, our executive services director. She's been working with your Michelle Smith and many other PUD folks for, 2-plus years on this process. So this would be a good time for us to hopefully get you all updated. So, Laura, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning. Can everyone hear me okay before I get started?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Thanks. Laura.
Thank you. I got some new headphones I want to make sure. So as the mayor mentioned this morning, we will be going over the latest on Confluence Parkway. Rebecca, would you mind going to the next slide, please? Thank you. So this is a presentation outlined. So we'll review a little bit about Confluence Parkway today, the National Environment Policy Act, or NEPA, as the mayor mentioned, the Section 4F regulation, which is a federal law that deals with the protection of parks and recreational areas, what we've done to date in terms of studies and proposed mitigation, an overview of our community outreach, and then I'll actually pass it off to Michelle Smith to go over more about the PUD's role. Next slide, please. So a little bit of background before we jump into Confluence Parkway. You know, as the mayor mentioned, this is a project that's been ongoing for quite some time. So this need was identified in a 2011 transportation plan for North Wenatchee Avenue. The plan identified a corridor that was needed to address transportation and safety and traffic flow, but also to support the economic vitality of the region as a whole. Next slide, please. So from those planning efforts, there were certain purposes and needs that came out. So when you're looking at creating a transportation project, you have to address certain things, and this is what we're trying to address with this project. This is a very important and critical part, especially for when we're looking at the environmental evaluation. The project's need is the transportation deficiency or the problem, and the purpose is a set of objectives that will meet that transportation deficiency. So on the screen, you see here that we are trying to address congestion relief and capacity, improve connectivity for all modes, add a third access or evacuation route, as the mayor mentioned earlier, with how we are accessed here in the Wenatchee area, improve transit operations and pedestrian access to transit, support the North Wenatchee Business District, and also improve bicycle and pedestrian safety and connections. Next slide, please. So as part of that planning effort, there were a variety of alternatives that were considered to find the most effective way to manage and to meet that project purpose and need. So you'll see on the map here that there's several alternatives that were considered, including a Western Avenue extension, a new Central Columbia River Bridge, and so on and so forth. So based off of those past analysis, we concluded that C4, or Confluence Parkway as known today, is the only alternative that meets that project and purpose need. The only other scenario is really not building it, which brings its own host of problems when it comes to transportation capacity and the access things that the mayor mentioned. But ultimately, in order to be able to meet all of those parameters, the only project that does that is Confluence Parkway. Next slide, please. So Confluence Parkway, as proposed, is a 2.5 corridor that extends on the north from the US to Euclid Avenue interchange. It crosses the Wenatchee River on a new bridge, and then it connects south to the existing North Miller and North Wenatchee intersection. So in a sec here, we'll play a video that kind of walks you through, well, drives you through future Confluence Parkway. But I want to note that in June of 2021, so last year, the city and its partners received a $92 million federal award for the Infrastructure for Rebuilding America program. It's called the INFRA program. So that program partially funded Confluence Parkway. It funded a variety of different projects, a whole network of projects, if you will, here in the Wenatchee Valley. It did only partially fund Confluence Parkway. But I do want to point out that for the purposes of federal regulations, when we do an environmental assessment and we evaluate the project, we have to evaluate the entire project as a whole. So in order to be able to move forward on our $92 million award, whether Confluence Parkway is fully built or fully funded or not, we do have to complete the environmental assessment for the entirety of the corridor. So with that, I believe we have a video queued up here. So this is starting from the US to Euclid Interchange on the north. So it'll play and kind of drive you through what Confluence Parkway will look like. So you start to go south between a lot of the industrial commercial area. It drives along some existing warehouses. And then I want to pause right here. So one of the things that we did for the project was you see Confluence State Park on the kind of west side of the screen here, and you see Confluence Parkway on the right side of the screen. Initial versions of Confluence Parkway had it actually going in between the building and Confluence State Park. We did revise that in order to be able to provide more separation from the park and future Confluence Parkway. So those buildings that you see modeled there, that's the current McDougal property. So we will go to the east of McDougal and between the railroad stations. I know that's not geographically correct when you're looking at a map, but when you're looking at the perspective from here. So we did move it over in order to provide an additional separation. So you'll see Confluence Parkway over the new Wenatchee River Bridge here. You see the current existing pedestrian bridge right there as well, which will be removed as part of the project and incorporated to a future new bridge. Here we are going up along the upper bench of the Horan Natural Area, and I want to point that out. So what you see there is on the right is the railroad, the existing railroad tracks. Where Confluence Parkway is right now is where the Apple Capital Loop Trail is. Kind of, I think I've heard that's where the community cats are. I haven't seen them yet, but that's kind of similar. And to the west is the Horan Natural Area. You see that the project stays up on this upper bench, so it's up on this upper utility berm. It does not go into the Horan Natural Area. It's really up on this utility corridor. And then we can go ahead and play to finish out. So it'll continue to go south. The Holly Street is on the left-hand side here, or the Holly Street Yard. So Confluence Parkway connects with existing Holly Street at a roundabout. There'll be a future grade separation, so an underpass underneath the railroad tracks at McKittrick. And there'll be another one here at North Miller Street, which will connect back to this intersection of North Wenatchee and Miller Avenue. So on the next slide, we'll talk about the National Environmental Policy Act. So I'll talk a little bit about this because, again, a lot of what we're doing, because it's funded with federal funding, we have to go through a variety of federal regulations in order to assess the project. So as part of what NEPA is it requires federal agencies to assess environmental effects of proposed actions. So we are currently underway with an environmental assessment led by the Federal Highway Administration. So they are the lead agency for the purposes of the project. The city and Washington State Department of Transportation serve as co-leads for the purposes of the project as well. Next slide, please. The other big kind of overlying requirement, although again, there's several, is Section 4F. So as I mentioned earlier, Section 4F analyzes a project to ensure that it's feasible, prudent, and causes the least overall harm specific to recreational resources, historical sites as well, but I think when it comes to the PUD's role, it's specific to recreational resources. So those resources that are under the PUD jurisdiction include the Apple Capitol Loop Recreation Trail, Confluence State Park, and the Horan Natural Area. Next slide, please. So there's a lot of content on here, but I promise I'll try to make it easy because it is quite a complicated process. So in essence, when we're doing the Section 4F report, FHWA is trying to determine if there is a feasible and prudent alternative to having to acquire these lands. If it contends that there is not, then it kind of goes through the next steps to decide, okay, if there is no feasible and prudent alternative, then they have to choose the one that causes the least overall harm. And in doing that, least overall harm is determined with consideration given to that list there on the right-hand side of the slide. So as you see, they consider a variety of things, including the views of the official with jurisdiction, which would be the PUD, and that's typically done via a Section 4F concurrence letter. Next slide, please. So because of the variety of impacts to the recreational resources, and then just overall in evaluating the project, we do have to perform certain studies. The studies that you see here on the slide are ones that we have that we released in June of 2021 for public comment. So those were reports that analyzed the project's natural and built environment. These projects were reviewed by PUD staff prior to public circulation. Once we released the documents, we also kind of supported that with a public open house. So at the public open house, we went over the different slides, the outcomes, the impacts, the proposed mitigation, and provided the comment with the public with a 45-day comment period. I'd like to note that all of these documents are still available on the city's project website. So we do have a dedicated site for that, and all of these reports, except for two, are available on here. So the one that's not available is the cultural resource report, which has some sensitive information, and the Section 4F individual evaluation, which will actually be released later this year. So I'm going to go over just some of the high-level outcomes of some of these reports. I tried to pick out the information that may be of importance to the commissioners this morning. Next slide. So in terms of the transportation report, the report found that Confluence Parkway has a beneficial effect by reducing congestion, enhancing safety, and improving bicycle, pedestrian, and transit networks. I want to also call out specifically the transit component. So this is a very important transit corridor, especially for Link Transit. They are currently investing over $20 million in bus capital, electrification, and passenger amenities. And they plan to do future spending of over $1.5 million a year for expanded services. So what Confluence Parkway will allow Link Transit to do is to expand a bus rapid transit service, so a 15-minute service along Confluence Parkway. And then that will also allow them to improve service along existing North Wenatchee Avenue. Next slide, please. So in terms of recreation, the project does require the relocation of the Apple Capitol Loop Recreation Trail. The city really took this as an opportunity to kind of step back and do things that would really upgrade the trail. This is a great opportunity that we have to invest more funding in what's already such a great community asset. So we have a couple of different ideas for doing that. As I mentioned, the project does impact the existing location of the Apple Capitol Loop Trail, except for on the southern end, and you can see it, I can't point, but where McKittrick or Holly Street is and the existing PUD substation, you see on the kind of left side of that is the blue line. So the blue line is Confluence Parkway. The yellow kind of dotted line to the east of the Holly Street yard, that's where the new Apple Capital Loop Trail will be. So in lieu of building Confluence Parkway where it is and keeping the Holly Street trail there, we opted to actually move that trail to the east side of the Holly yard, therefore really separating the two uses. We thought that was a really nice improvement to have a dedicated trail. We also have incorporated visual screening and vegetation berms that will not only separate future users from future Confluence Parkway, but also from the railroad track. We moved the roadway away from Wenatchee Confluence State Park on the north. That was what I pointed out in the video in terms of the alignment. And then we tried to minimize noise impacts to the wetlands by using noise walls and retaining walls in certain areas, which I'll go into further detail here in just a sec. Next slide. So this is a segment that I was mentioning that's closest to the Holly Street Yard, the Holly PUD substation that's there. So on the left-hand side, you see the pictures of the existing conditions. You can basically imagine that Holly Street is future Confluence Parkway. It uses that same alignment. But instead of keeping the trail in that same location or rebuilding the trail in the same location, we opted to move it to the east side. So you really get a nice separation there. So if you look at the cross-section, you see Confluence Parkway, you see the Holly Street Yard, and then you see the trail off to the east. So the project relocates the trail and provides a dedicated trail that will remove the user conflicts between vehicles and driveways. And it will also provide visual access to the Horan Natural Area. Next slide. This area here is an area where we are trying to achieve two major goals. We really want to minimize noise for trail users since this is where they are closest to Confluence Parkway. And we really wanted to reduce or avoid impacts to the wetland areas. So we incorporated the noise wall in order to reduce the noise impacts to the user. It's a 4-foot noise wall, which will actually feel more like an 8-foot noise wall because of the different grade separations and where the roadway is and where the trail is. The other piece was the project initially anticipated using level out the slope in order to add the trail. We opted to do either a boardwalk or a retaining wall in order to reduce the amount of fill that will be necessary and really try to stay out of those sensitive areas while, again, still providing a separate dedicated trail for users. I'll also note that Confluence Parkway will have bike lanes in both directions, so for trail users, they can kind of easily decide which path they would like to take. Next slide. This is a slide that shows in that same location. So this shows you a retaining wall design. As you see, the wetlands and the Horan Natural Area off to the right. There are a lot of transmission lines out there as well. And in early 2021, our team walked the site with the PUD utility team to determine those utility needs. So we'll have to coordinate more as the project advances to 30% design. But we definitely felt like there's some opportunities to kind of reimagine the system that's out there. Next slide, please. So I want to point this one out in terms of impacts to ecosystems. So what you see on the right-hand slide is a map. That dark blue area is a wetland. The lighter blue area is a wetland buffer area. The black line that you see kind of crossing all the way through is future Confluence Parkway. And that hashed orange that you see are all the areas that have potential temporary impacts. So as you can see, we really try to stay up on that upper bench. Most of those temporary impacts are construction related and or areas where we might disturb some of the existing riparian areas, but we are either restoring them or replanting in another area to make up for that loss. I'll also note that Confluence Parkway, because it will be upgrading existing roadway systems, there'll be about 10 acres of replaced asphalt and concrete with new stormwater systems. I also want to point out that little bump out on the slide. So if you look at the picture, it's kind of a bump out that goes to the east. That area there, the reason why it looks like there's a ton of disturbance there is that that property is currently under private ownership. The project intends to acquire those lands and actually use them as a land exchange so that those areas will become part of the Horan Natural Area. So the reason why it shows disturbance is because we intend to remove any of the structures that don't align with the existing use, revegetate the area, restore. So that'll cause a little bit of ground disturbance, but we think that's a huge benefit for the project. Next slide, please. This is the last slide on the trail. So this here is the future Confluence Parkway vehicular bridge. What we do here is we also combine a new pedestrian bridge. And so, as I mentioned earlier, we will be removing the existing PUD pedestrian bridge and incorporating that to this new facility. The nice thing about that is it gives us a lot more right-of-way for pedestrian use. So the existing bridge is about 8 feet wide. The new one will be about 16 feet wide, and it's still a dedicated, only for pedestrians and cyclists. So there won't be any vehicle or car conflicts. And then we'll be removing some of the piers that make up for some of the additional piers that the project will add with the new bridge. Next slide. So now I'm going to hop into noise. I will kind of forewarn that these next slides are very content heavy on the slide, but my hope was that you'll be able to use this later to kind of reference back. So I won't read off word for word. I'm just going to kind of pick out some high level details here. So we did work on a noise study, and in order to analyze the noise impacts on the project, we looked at a total of 22 sites. And then predicted noise levels at future sites at 116 different locations. So I do want to point out one thing, though, in terms of how these were calculated. So the noise modeling is based off of peak hours in a 2040 model. So in essence, pretend like it's the year 2040 and Confluence Parkway is built out, and it's Friday at 5 o'clock. They use that parameter in terms of how noisy or how loud or how many people are on there to model the future noise impacts. They're really taking worst case scenario. So when you're looking at the outcomes, again, this is worst case scenario in 20 years. Next step. So when you look at the Horan Natural Area, what the noise study found is that most sites in the Horan Natural Area will only have an increase of 4 to 5 decibels. Well, and while that is a little bit noticeable, the resulting noise levels during peak hours, again, are comparable to a bedroom or a living room during a quiet evening. You'll see on the map that the Horan Natural Area is Category A. So under federal requirements, Category A is the most stringent criteria because it's reserved for lands on where serenity and quiet are of extraordinary significance. So when we're looking at the impacts for noise were really held to a very high standard and justifiably so. So while there was those 4 to 5 decibel increase, the new noise levels are still under the criteria for this category. Next slide, please. Next, we looked at Confluence State Park. So Confluence State Park is a different category. It's under parks and schools. It is a more active space than the Horan Natural Area. We do predict to see some increased noise levels in the day use areas and in areas closest to the parking lot road. But overall, the noise levels are not expected to exceed any noise levels that are not fully compatible with the existing use. Next slide, please. The Apple Capitol Loop Trail. We looked at this one. I would say that the Apple Capitol Trail probably has the most impact when it comes to noise. You know, as I showed earlier, because you have the users so close to the roadway, the noise is just kind of one of those things that you can't really avoid, but you can minimize it. We minimize it with those noise walls as well as with earthen berms. And the map here, as you can see, is very complicated because they really took a look at every section there and how you could potentially incorporate design to minimize that. So noise levels along the Capitol Loop Trail are predicted to increase by 18 decibels at one part of the trail, that one area where the trail users are very close to Confluence Parkway. However, for the majority of the trail area, the increases are in a range of 4 to 9 decibels over the existing conditions. Next slide, please. So this is a summary of the impacts to Section 4F resources and the proposed mitigation. So as I mentioned, we will be doing incorporating noise walls, vegetation berms. We are relocating the Holly Street Trail off the street onto a dedicated trail. We've got an upgraded trail experience by removing the vehicle and driveway complex. There is no loss of trail mileage, though in essence, the Apple Capitol Loop will still be 10 miles, which I know is very important, and we're not losing any of those connections. And in fact, we're adding an additional connection to Old Station. We are also removing the smaller existing pedestrian bridge and constructing a newer, wider bridge. And the last thing that I want to point out here is these yellow spots that are on the map. So that yellow triangle on the bottom is that proposed land that we would like to acquire for the project in exchange for the land that the project is taking up on that upper utility corridor. On the north end, that's the same thing, except that property is being acquired for so that we can relocate the current park ranger staff housing. We think that these are good land exchanges and that kind of meet close to a one-for-one in terms of square footage, but with the habitat quality is, we think, much better in that southern triangle area. Next slide. So, as was mentioned earlier, we have been working closely with the PUD in order to ensure that the actions that we're taking are not only considering impacts to the resources, but also trying to make sure that the community understands what the project is doing and is kept up to date. So at the beginning of the project, we actually worked with all of the major stakeholders to put together the Confluence Parkway Environmental Assessment Coordination and Public Outreach Plan. So the plan was prepared by the city in partnership with Federal Highways and WSDOT. But the coordination plan was also very much developed in conjunction with the PUD to be consistent with PUD practices. And that would allow us then to use the resulting environmental assessment to be submitted as part of the administrative record for a future FERC action. Next slide, please. So in implementing that coordination plan, and since 2017, the city has held a variety of outreach meetings and events, including over 120 meetings. I believe you guys got a copy of the coordination log. That includes all of the different meetings that have happened with a variety of stakeholders, including USDOT, Washington State Parks, the Audubon Society, the Confederate Tribes of the Colville Reservation, the Yakima Nation, DAP, WSDOT Link, quite a bit, a lot. We've also hosted several meetings and tours with legislative offices, including Senator Murray, Cantwell, and Hawkins, and Representative Schreier, Newhouse, and Representative Fay. All of these meetings that you see here on the screen, well, not the future meeting, but it will be. But all of the past meetings have been advertised via social media, newspaper, radio, and email invites and flyers. Meeting materials have been available in both Spanish and English with on-site translation at all of our meetings. We also included links to the summary reports with your packet today, and those are also available on our website for any other member of the public if they would like to review those. And as I noted, and as noted on the slide, we've got an upcoming meeting this year, hopefully an open house in person or in virtual, depending on safety measures. And the intent of that meeting is to release the environmental assessment for public circulation. At that time, we would also release the Section 4F report, and the open house would support dialogue of those documents with the public. And so we would probably do something very similar to this, a PowerPoint going over the environmental assessment in Section 4F and receive comments from the public. Next slide, please. So what you see here is our schedule for the project. So we have been working on the NEPA environmental assessment since early 2017 and 2018 through, and we anticipate to finish the process mid to late this year. That will allow us to begin 30% design on the project, then move into final design, environmental permitting, and right-of-way acquisition. And we go into construction funding obligation and then construction in 2025. I want to point out specifically a date in 2024, and that's September of 2024. That's a statutory timeline that is required by the $92 million federal award. So we have to be able to obligate our construction funding by September of 2024. And then once we hit that milestone, we have to begin construction within 18 months of that date. So we're really working up towards towards those milestones in order to be able to hit those federal timelines. So at this point, I will now pass it off to Michelle Smith, who will review the actions from the PUD that will allow us to move forward and support the necessary lands for this project.
Thank you, Laura, and good morning, Commissioners. Michelle Smith, Director of Hydro Licensing. As Laura stated, we've been engaged on this project for quite a while, about 5 years or more. We've known that there would be unavoidable impacts, both long-term and temporary, during this construction of the project. And for the PUD, those impacts have been due to the proposed roadway location adjacent to the park and the Haran Natural Area. Also, the exchange of property required for the location of the roadway will require a project boundary adjustment for our license. And then also the changes to the loop trail and construction of the new bridge over the Wenatchee River. So some impacts there that we've been working through related to the environmental assessment that's been going on for this project. We've remained neutral regarding formal support for the project for now, though we have been cooperating through the environmental assessment to look at those impacts. And we've been working well together with the city, trying to build a good documentation of possible mitigation concepts. And specifically, we want to make sure that we have a good consultation record with agencies and our PUD customer owners. What I'm showing on section related to the section 4F on this slide 26 is really related to the fact, as Laura mentioned, that under section 4F of the Department of Transportation Act, we are a official with jurisdiction because of the park. And therefore, impacts to the park, Federal Highway needs to have our input and our comments related to the potential impacts and the mitigation to mitigate those impacts. So we have provided, we've reviewed a draft of that evaluation so far. It'll be part of the evaluation, the environmental evaluation and NEPA process. Basically what we've reviewed so far, we have basically made the statement that we agree there will be unavoidable temporary and permanent impacts. We also have come to the, you know, that our final conclusions would be considered after the NEPA process is complete and we can see the full impact and mitigation proposal at that point. There will be this year, as part of this 4F evaluation, a request from Chelan PUD to formalize our comments on the 4F document, and we would it would be something that our general manager would sign in support of our board. So that is something that will be coming later this year. Rebecca, can you go to the next slide, please?
I have a question about that. Do you want me to wait until you finish with your? Yeah, let's wait. I can wait till you finish.
Okay, thanks, Ann. The next slide is showing what we believe to be FERC requirements associated with the changes. you know, thinking ahead, we have had some conversation with FERC over the years to make sure that we are going about this in the right way. And so based on that discussion, FERC agreed that using the environmental assessment and basically the NEPA process the city is going through, using those documents, so the ESA consultation, the Section 106 tribal consultation, all of that will become part of the record that we would support to FERC after it's done. So no FERC filings would be done until after all of the NEPA process is complete and we have all of the documentation that those elements have been completed. So I just wanted to alert the board that we will have to make some FERC filings on this proposed project, and that we will be relying on the completion of NEPA, and if the board then approves of us making these filings with FERC, we would proceed at that point. There's I should mention, I'm sorry, can you go back, Rebecca? I wanted to mention that the second, there's basically two filings. The first one is conceptual in nature, so no, we would be filing for conceptual approval of the proposed project boundary changes, so the exchange that Laura was showing in those earlier slides of those 5 acres, you know, us bringing in additional acreages into the park, so we'd show that change. We would also show the proposed change to the exhibit, our recreation plan with the trail realignment. A second filing would need to be made later, around 2024. It's after the city gets all of their permits for the bridge construction, and then we would be filing under our Article 412 land use article, giving the city a permit, basically approval, because that bridge would be constructed over the Wenatchee River, which is within our project boundary. So I just wanted to let the board know that there would be two separate filings, one after the NEPA is complete, and then a second one related to the bridge later in a couple of years. Okay, final slide, Rebecca. I did want to let you know that we've spent quite a bit of time. Laura was discussing earlier the outreach that the city has done on this project. There's been a lot of agency work that, at our request, the city stepped in and helped us talk to almost all of the agencies. Now we've completed that this year to make sure that all of our licensed stakeholder agencies and the tribes are alerted, have been alerted about this project, understand the mitigation that's being proposed and the impacts, and have been given an opportunity to weigh in on some early comments. And so we appreciate that effort by the city to help us with all of that. And we are now thinking that it would be a good idea to hold some what we're calling augmented PUD outreach, which would be in addition to what Laura was talking about earlier. This would be specific to our customer owners, basically explaining the project in terms of the impacts to the park and the FERC filings that would need to be made, and you know, just wanting to make sure that we have some more impact and feedback for the board on the proposed changes to our park related to the project. So I'm proposing that we augment that by doing some outreach over the next several months. And, you know, we're looking at some open houses. Those could be virtual, in-person, radio. We'll have a website with some feedback, buttons for folks to give them ample opportunity to weigh in and provide us their feedback. And then we would circle back with the board with the findings and summarize that after they were complete. And then the board could let us know if they feel that they need any additional information at that point. That summarizes my discussion on this, so I welcome any questions.
So, Steve, may I go?
I have a question.
Well, thank you. Michelle, just a clarification, and I know we'll talk about this more, but so the ask of the PUD, or more specifically the ask of the commissioners, is that we would approve the 4F concurrence letter?
Yes. The concurrence letter, we did provide, the city put together an example of that concurrence letter just to give, and that was in the folder of all of the handouts that I know there were a lot of additional information handouts in there. But there is an example letter in there, so you can get a sense for what's going to be asked. And I tried to put it into that slide, that Section 4F slide also. But basically, you know, we're basically concurring that the project does have impacts, but that mitigation has been put together that will minimize harm, I think is the word we're looking for, to the Section 4F resource, which is the park in the Herman Natural Area. So basically saying that, yes, you know, the board would be saying, yes, we approve the general manager to write this letter of concurrence that the evaluation has, environmental evaluation has concluded, and that we feel that the resources have been thoroughly researched and looked at, and that we think that the least, that the mitigation will provide the least amount of harm to the park and Huron Natural Area.
Yeah, so I'm looking at Section 4F requirements right here. And it says there, there's no feasible avoidance alternative to the use of the land, and the action includes all possible planning to minimize harm to the property resulting from such use, or that FHWA determines that the use of the property will have a de minimis impact. So we would be concurring with that. And would that come after, that would come after the NEPA process?
I'm going to ask the city to help with this one. This has been a little bit challenging to even for us to understand the timing of what the city would like to see on this. Laura, do you want to maybe step in and talk about the concurrence letter?
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. So, yes, the letter procedurally would not be due until after consideration of public comment and potential impacts on mitigation measures. So, you know, as I mentioned, we were hoping to do that open house when we release the environmental assessment. We would also release the Section 4F report so the public would have the opportunity to review those. And so before Federal Highways would close out that process, they would need to have the concurrence letter from the PUD. When I say earlier that it's procedurally, you know, the reason that we also wanted to come in front of the board now is because there is a lot to consider. And while, yes, that letter wouldn't be due until that time, we're hoping that we can work in conjunction with, continue to work with your staff and your team to get to a place that when we do get to, you know, August or September, you know, there are no surprises, you know, that we've done all the necessary outreach and kind of answered all of the questions so that that letter is really just more of a checkbox, right? And so, yes, procedurally, that letter is not due until after that point, but we're hoping that by continuing the conversation today and working with the commissioners, that we can get to a place where there's an understanding of what that outcome's going to be when we get to October.
And anything else?
Yeah. Steve, I unfortunately have to get off and start driving. So, do you mind if I have a couple questions and a couple comments? Do you mind if I make those now, and then I will get off and I'll get on the phone later. Is this the appropriate time?
Let's go ahead because of your situation and ask your questions, and then we'll continue to move on. Go ahead, Ann.
Okay. Thank you. First of all, Frank, Laura, thank you for bringing this to us. I think you initiated this coming to our meeting, and I really appreciate that. Our relationship with the city is really important, always has been. I just wish it had happened 2 years ago. It feels like, to one commissioner, again, I'm one in five, but it feels like we kind of made a big leap from 2017 when we had a letter from Steve Wright, and I'll reference that letter here pretty soon, but it feels like a big leap from that letter, which was really strongly worded, that we had real serious concerns about this particular alternative to where we are today. And I see the list of all the meetings. I regret that I wasn't more engaged, that I didn't pay more attention. But I think that's the case with a lot of us. And I know there are lots of people in the Wenatchee area who really pay attention to this sort of thing. They love their trails. They love their parks. And they weren't aware of all that's been going on. So, I really encourage you to do a lot more outreach. The PUD does a really good job at outreach, and I hope we'll collaborate on that. So I referenced the letter from Steve Wright, so I want to bring that up. Not the letter, but just some comments on that. Sorry. I'll get the. Okay, so this was a letter dated May 1st, 2017, to Jeff Wilkins, Executive Director of the Shenandoah Transportation Council, and it was from Steve Wright. And I was aware of the letter at the time. I remember thinking, this is appropriate. The wording is strong. Our level of concern is high. And I remember thinking, this is good. This is important that we get this to the city. And I felt comfortable with it at the time. Steve says a couple different things in there. Our consultant has identified parks recreation as a category of environmental impact with a high risk. NEPA for transportation incorporates 4F requirements, a particularly high bar. And then he goes on to say, in this context, the PUD would be the agency of jurisdiction that effectively self-determines the degree of enhancements. In this case, from a public roadway adjacent to and through the exhibit our boundary. Let me go on. The proposed alignment, Confluence Parkway, would cause irreparable damage and permanently alter the character of the Wenatchee Confluence State Park and the natural habitat area, as well as the Apple Capitol Loop Trail. The quality of the recreational experience, camping, walking, bicycling, running, would be adversely impacted, and the unique interface between natural habitat and urban center would be forever changed. He goes on to say, you know, as we all know, customer owners have come to treasure these facilities, which contribute significantly to the quality of life in the Wenatchee Valley. And he finishes with, I think the other commissioners have this letter. Considering the aforementioned impacts and considering the interests of our customer owners, Chelan PUD has serious reservations about any proposal to modify the project boundary or Exhibit R to accommodate the proposed parkway. Thanks for the opportunity to comment. So that letter was in 2017. He did have a follow-up letter where he did go on to say, we really value the relationship, and we look forward to the opportunity to work with you on this. So my question is, when was the decision made to choose this particular alternative, say, over, you know, widening Wenatchee Avenue or the, what were the others, the Pershing, is it? The Pershing extension. What was the date of that decision that was made to choose this alternative?
So Laura, you want to take that, or you want Jeff Wilkins to handle that? Is Jeff on?
I think Jeff may be on.
I'm on, yes. Good morning. I think the right answer is, subsequent to that, we initiated what we call a pre-NEPA study with a consulting firm that gave us a higher-level scan of the environmental issues related to alternatives to get at some of those questions. And the result was a reconfirmation that in the balancing act of, you know, all the factors, public safety, economic and community development, land use, all of the issues that we balance in looking at these alternatives, not to mention the potential to deal with the transportation challenges. We came back and reconfirmed that Confluence Parkway was still the only essentially feasible alternative that met those objectives. So the council is looking at a broad set of community objectives and certainly was very well aware of the concern about the parks. I can also tell you that initial letter surfaced after one meeting with one manager at the PUD who had been unaware of the previous conversations and it was very new to that individual. So, you know, I think we worked through that a little bit. And I had made a commitment with Steve Wright at the time that we would invest more resources and time into revisiting. So that was the pre-NEPA study. And one of the reasons we didn't initiate NEPA at that time had more to do with the fact that with our resources that are federal monies, there are payback provisions if you begin NEPA but then don't later follow through with construction. So it was also a bit of a financial risk assessment to do NEPA light, if you will. So it was a precursor to the work that's being done now.
Thank you. There was also a letter from Jeff Smith, who he's retired now, but he was managing director, and he was more closely involved in this. He's I always forget his title, but he's community outreach. Rebecca, Jeff's title. Do you remember?
He was the managing director of district services.
District services, yeah. So he works, has always worked very closely with the city, and his letter reflected the same thing, serious concerns about noise and issues that probably could not be mitigated. I mean, it's serious concerns about mitigation. So, all right, well, thanks. I appreciate the timeline on that. We met with Michelle and staff, Gary Arsenault and I did about 6 months ago, with lots of questions about this, and they presented the sound study. And I, as one commissioner, that's my number one concern. I think, particularly for the natural area, because one of the principles, kind of let me remind you what these principles say. One of the main principles was to ensure relocation of the Apple Capitol Loop Trail, that it prioritizes public safety, the environment, and the natural habitat, and maintains or improves the quality of the recreational experience. So we need to at least maintain it or improve it. My concern was the sound issue with a highway running right next to the natural area. And I appreciate and understand all the mitigation measures that you guys have proposed, the sound wall, the 4-foot sound wall, from that sound study and from everything we learned from that. That sound is going to follow a natural arc up over the wall. It doesn't matter if the wall is 6 feet tall. That sound's going to arc up over that wall, and it's going to come back down, and it's going to land in the Paran natural area. And so my concern is that this is a natural area. It is a really, it's really precious. You can't recreate natural areas in the middle of a city, in the middle of an urban area, and it is going to be impacted by sound. And I just don't see how, but, again, that's down the road. I'm sharing my concerns.
So, Ann, I'm going to, those concerns are noted, and I appreciate that. Before I turn this over to any public comment or commissioner comments, I think I would just like to, again, summarize my appreciation for city and staff work and involvement in answering these questions, and these are tough questions to answer. So I just want everybody to know how much I appreciate their efforts. As I listened to the presentation, thanks, Ann. Safe travels. I have my list of questions just came up from listening today. So I look forward to continuing my work and getting those questions answered, which I don't need to do today. But I think what I would like to before I open it up for comments, is just to follow up with what Michelle said, the need, I think timing is everything here, and I'm a little bit worried about timing, so I don't want to drop the ball from our side of things and yet not have time overwhelm us either. I want to do a good job and go out with what Michelle, I believe she used the word augmented public comment, and really from our standpoint as commissioners, go out working with the city, sharing this more information with the public, and really doing what I call a PUD public comment time. We do a good job with that. I love going out and sitting in those meetings and listening to the comments and learning and listening. So I'm looking forward to that opportunity in the next few months. And I know the 45 to 60 days was thrown out there, and yet I see something in the time frame in the presentation that had to do with kind of setting a target of June. So I think we need to keep talking about dates and goals and not letting things slip by the wayside. So that's my commitment there, Frank, to work with you on that. So at this time, I am going to open it up to commissioners for any other comment, and then I'll turn it over and open it up for comments from our public. Commissioners, any other questions or comments, particularly about the process moving forward?
Mr. McKenna, if I may, please.
Dennis.
My question is fairly specific. It is related to the relocation of the park manager's home. So is it my understanding that that current residence, and would that also include the shops and storage buildings, that its current location be relocated?
I can answer that if that's appropriate.
Please.
So it would just be the park staff housing based off of where the alignment is for Confluence State Park, or I'm sorry, Confluence Parkway. It does require us to relocate the staff housing. I believe there are some other buildings and some other auxiliary buildings that would stay there. So in acquiring additional land for the project, it's so that we can relocate it in a similar area so that it's still kind of proximate to those other buildings.
So it would not intrude into, well, it would not cross the Wenatchee River, as I understand what you're saying, into the natural area.
No.
It's on the side where it is.
It's very close to where it is. In fact, it would be just north of its existing location, and it would stay on the north side of the river.
Okay, kind of where the parking lot area is now.
It would be where we would acquire some of these existing McDougal property. So it's,
okay.
It's kind of in that general area, but it very much stays in Confluence State Park.
Okay, thank you.
Of course.
Other commissioners?
Steve, I'd just like to comment that I really appreciate the presentation we got today and the clarification on the role that we as a commission play in this entire process. I think that's really important for my understanding of what's being asked of us, and I want to say thank you to the city and to Michelle for providing that clarity, because this helped me a lot.
Great. Thank you, Randy. I think, Gary, you're the last one. Anything, any questions, comments before I open it up? Cutting out, Gary.
And Frank,
Gary, we're not here anymore.
And relationship.
Gary, can you hear me?
I will hold my comments.
Okay, I
can, Steve. I'll hold my comments.
Okay, we're just not hearing you, so we're just thank you for doing that.
What did you tell me about a vaccine center? And
okay, we have some external noise there. If everyone could mute. Rebecca, would you go ahead and open it up to public lines?
That's why they told my dad to stop eating.
And once again, I'm going to make an effort to get people to mute their phones. If you have a comment, you can raise your hand either physically and wave at us or electronically to let us know that you would like to make a comment or ask a question while we have staff online.
And I would just follow that up, Commissioner McKenna, that the phone lines, if you've been muted because we were getting background noise, it's just a *6 to unmute yourself in case anybody didn't hear that message come through.
Thank you, Rebecca. Okay, so Rebecca, I'll just have you help me. Do you see anybody that would like to make comment or ask questions at this time?
I did see a hand up earlier from a Mr. Miner. That's been lowered. Oh, there it is. Mr. Miner, did you have a question or a comment?
Hi. So I'm the guy that did the noise study for the Clipfellas Parkway. And I just wanted to clarify a few things and just make sure you understand how sound actually transmits, because there were some things said that aren't quite really true as far as the broadcasting of noise from the roadway. So there's three sources of noise. There's cars, medium trucks, and heavy trucks. And passenger vehicles or cars and light trucks, the majority of the noise is higher frequency, and it comes from the tire roadway interface. And so and it doesn't flank over a wall. It actually bounces off the wall and goes pretty straight. The only noise that flanks over a wall would be low frequency noise from heavy trucks, like semis and long haul trucks. So the noise walls that are up there are extremely effective at reducing noise from passenger vehicles, medium trucks, like UPS delivery trucks, not quite so much against heavy trucks. So I just want to make sure you understand that those walls actually do quite a bit of work, and they've worked very well for the higher frequency noise that comes from passenger vehicles, cars. And there's also a slower speed limit on this road than what you would find on most highways. And just for reference, you get about a 3 decibel noise reduction for every 10 miles an hour reduction in speed until you get to about 30 miles an hour. And then, you know, the engine noise and stuff starts to make that reduction less notable. But once you get above 30, every time you go 10 miles faster, you're going to have a 3 decibel increase in noise levels, which is just barely perceptible, but it is an increase in noise levels. So just a couple of things I wanted to clarify. If you have any questions about noise, I'll be on the call for a little bit longer.
Michael, this is Steve McKenna. I do have one of the questions I did want to ask. I'm glad you're there. When I noticed in the presentation, in one of the drawings, renderings, that as people were walking next to that pinch point area, where the road is closest to the Horan area, it looks like the picture is it's up high, head height, but in reality is it about 4 feet tall?
No, let me fix that too. So there's actually a 4 foot berm along pretty much the entire corridor with a 4 foot wall on top of that berm. At the pinch point, we don't have enough right of way to continue to have the berm. So at the pinch point, we narrow the berm down to nothing, and we end up with an 8 foot wall there. So you do have the effectiveness of a virtual 8 foot wall along most of the highway or most of the corridor there. And at the pinch point, because the limited right of way is just the sound wall, and there's no berm. So
is that 8 foot wall from the road height up, or is it including the step down to where the
I'd have to look on that. Let me see if I can pull that up. Clipfellas Parkway.
Yeah, it's actually 4 foot above the roadway, and eight trail is lower than the roadway.
Okay, that's what I thought. And so my next question would be then, is it possible and does it help to extend that 4 foot wall to an 8 foot wall above the road? So it would actually be a 12-foot.
We did look at that in the report. We did an analysis for a wall as high as up to 8 feet along the entire corridor, and you did get some more noise reduction at the pinch point, which I do believe is like receiver, let's see here, R58. No, that's not with the pinch point. pinch points up here, I think. Here we go. The second here. It's R19? No, who was at the pinch point?
Well, and I just think, Michael, we could also just say that's one of the questions that we're going to, at least I'm going to have as we move forward. So, but I appreciate all your time in getting on online to answer that with us. So, unless you have a...
So, yeah, I do have an answer. So, okay, you get about a 5 decibel reduction the way we have it. You get about a 7 decibel if you went up to 2 feet, up to about a 6 foot wall. And you could get up to 11 decibels if you have an 8 foot wall. So, yeah, you would get more noise reduction with a taller wall. You've also got the aesthetics to consider, too. But the thing about the taller wall is I couldn't get those to work out from a cost standpoint under Washington State Department of Transportation's effectiveness for noise walls. It was difficult to get the taller walls to work because there's a limited amount of benefit from those taller walls. But, yeah, the pinch point was one of the places where the taller wall actually worked very well.
Okay. Rebecca, thank you, Michael, by the way. Rebecca, do we have anybody else signaling?
Don't see any other hands up at the moment.
Given that last chance, it's hard to see who wants to comment, but I am looking forward to, as commissioners, to really get out in these next couple months and working with the city and staff for these augmented public comment for us to help us in that decision making. And I agree with Randy. I appreciate Frank and Laura and Michelle. Clarification on our role in all of this. So that's greatly appreciated.
Commissioner McKenna, Mayor Kunsch has his hand up.
Just a second, Randy. I'll be right back to you. So we have somebody with their hand up.
Mayor Kunsch has his hand up to say something else.
Okay. Frank? Mayor?
Yeah, I just as you're sort of closing up, Commissioner Condon made a couple comments that I think at least deserve some response from at least me and my staff. One, I think to refer to this road as a highway does it an injustice. This is not a highway. This is a parkway. This is 30 to 35 miles an hour. And to refer to it as a highway really takes a step backwards for what we're trying to accomplish here. Secondly, she was extremely disappointed in the lack of ability for us to get together and have these conversations, for which we've been trying for somewhere between 12 and 16 months to get in front of this body for updates. So both of those, I think, at least from the city's perspective, we have been trying and trying and trying to get in front of this group. So I appreciate the time today, but apologize that it's this far along in the process, but it wasn't for a lack of us trying to get in front of your group. That's all. Thank you.
Randy.
Yeah, just a comment
and
for the mayor. Recognizing the big picture, you are planning on 2 railroad underpasses, if I saw things correctly. And based on our recent experience up here in Kashmir with the Goodwin Bridge replacement, start really early with the railroad, maybe a couple of years before you really think.
Yeah, Randy, we actually, part of, again, assuming that we get through the NEPA process, the funding that we currently have is for the 2 underpasses. And so we are already in discussion with Burlington Northern, actively on the amounts of right-of-way types of stuff. So we are, again, we understand they move slow, but we, again, because that's already funded, we are working very closely with them, and hopefully we'll get what we need from them very soon.
Yeah, and funding wasn't an issue up here either. It was getting somebody to sign a piece of paper for months.
Thank you, Frank and Randy. Dennis?
Yeah, part of this is what I'm going to say is within the PUD realm of decision-making, and part of it is outside of that. But there's a cost-value relationship. So let's assume, for conversation's sake, the PUD agrees to the mitigations that are presented and signs off on their portion of the project. One of the criticisms I've heard in the community is, why are we going to all of this purpose to move the congestion 1 mile south? The congestion is now currently essentially at the bridge area. And to some people, in their opinion, it looks like that we're going to move the congestion about 1 mile to the Wenatchee Avenue Miller area. So the question then comes up, is the cost value worth altering a natural area for something that just simply moves the problem a little bit further, literally, down the road? So just, you know, when I have to answer people in public, please help me with that answer.
I would love to field that one. So if you think about North Wenatchee Avenue, at the north end, it's fed by about 14 lanes, Highway 2 from both directions, Chelan Highway. So you get essentially 12 to 14 into 4. And then south of Maple, you get the same effect. It's a network effect between Miller, Chelan Mission, Wenatchee Avenue. So that bottleneck is really the choke point where we needed additional capacity. So it does address congestion to a large degree, but what it also does is it allows growth from around 40,000 trips a day, which is economic activity in the community. It's commuters, it's business that's on the road, et cetera, to grow to upwards of 65,000, 68,000, which is what we forecast in the next 20, 25 years. Without the added capacity somewhere, that growth can't happen. That additional demand for travel and economic activity can't be accommodated. So, I do understand the idea that it just moves the – sometimes – for spot congestion projects do exactly that. They just push it to the next traffic light, and you haven't accomplished anything. We don't think that's the case with this project. But I hope that helps.
Jeff, for my benefit, would you reintroduce yourself and your role?
Yes, thank you. Jeff Wilkins. I'm Executive Director for the Chelan Douglas Transportation Council.
Thank you.
Commissioner McKenna?
Sir.
I've got three questions from Commissioner Arsenault, if you'd like me to read them or if you want me to
hold. Okay. Yes, please. Go ahead.
First question is, do we know the distance between the campground and the proposed road? The second question is, has there been a carbon emission odor study done impacting the wetlands? And the third question is, was there consideration given to make this an electric vehicle roadway only?
All right. And for the sake of time, we're not going to delve into the answers to those, but you do have, for those working on this, have those questions from a commissioner to address later on. And at this time, I'm going to move on to with our agenda because of time. But again, I want to thank Frank and Laura and Jeff and Michelle and others for your assistance today in this presentation, and look forward to our augmented public outreach efforts from our board. So with that, I will close this part of the agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jen.
Kirk, item number 4, quarterly district performance plan. Let's move into that with our managing directors.
Yeah, so this is our annual report of the fourth quarter results on the district performance plan. So each of the managing directors will be going through just the items that changed between the third quarter and the fourth quarter, and Dan Garrison, as acting managing director of generation and transmission, will cover most of mine, but I will start with the first one. The first one is to provide the board a quarterly status updates on the district performance plan, which that is complete with this report.
All right. Good morning, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director for District Services. I've got the next couple. Complete program outreach to local agencies and nonprofits. This is with respect to the Public Power Benefit Program. You might recall that we did delay our outreach due to COVID, but we did do that late in the year, had letters sent out to stakeholders, information on our website, in our newsletter, and a presentation to the Tri-Commission. So we are in the process of and continue to collect submissions for future public power benefit opportunities, and we'll be bringing you more information later this year. And the next one is a process that we go through every year where we come back to the board if there's additional funding that needs to be allocated. We did have a discussion towards the latter part of the year. We also reviewed the criteria with which we will review requests under. You did make an additional allocation to the Riverfront Park planning effort. We do still have some funding available for 2022 that we will discuss later in the year as we collate and bring those project requests to you, as I mentioned just a moment ago. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, I have the next one under 7B. That was to move forward on some county franchise discussions. We've had a couple of topics that I think have opened up the door that we will continue to work with the county to look at the franchise agreement going into 22.
Great. Me again. The next one is concerning the Arondo River Park effort with the Regional Port Authority. At your November 1st, 2021 meeting, we went through a parks update and included some information on our conversations with the port and outlined that agreement. This language here says it was approved by the commission. It actually wasn't. We just presented it to you at this time. And we will be bringing you the formal interlocal agreement in March for your consideration. Next one concerns parks O&M and capital planning and just our ongoing effort to ensure that we're spending customer owner money wisely and for the best for the most for the longest. So we're can always take a look at trends and forward projections for O&M and capital spending, and that effort was completed last year.
And I'll take the next one. And just happy to report that we did get a new contributor to the Hydropower Research Institute right at the end of the year, and Ontario Power Generation in Canada has joined the Institute. So it's great news to have another large utility join our efforts there.
Commissioners, I have the next two. They are both related to outreach efforts, and this language is pretty typical to what we have year over year. Those efforts, despite challenges with COVID in terms of meeting, we were able to get back more normal conditions in 2021 with more in-person events, as well as virtual events. So both of those are marked blue and completed for the year.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Dan Garrison, Acting Managing Director of Generation Transmission. That item, performing statewide elementary teacher training, was completed and before the end of October of last year. I'm happy to report that despite COVID and all the other interruptions we had with our outreach to the education side, we were able to train a large number of teachers, 128, towards the benefits of hydropower.
Good morning, Commissioners. Sean Smith here, Managing Director of Energy Resources. First item here is acquiring 2 average megawatts of energy efficiency. We we're just shy of that target. That was a stretch goal, and we hit 1.9 average megawatts. It should be noted our compliance target is only 0.85, so still well above that. Next is our behavioral program design approval. We're going to revisit that this year. Other work came up with the advent of CPA and the IRP and the SEP program, CEIP, and EV rate work and low-income EE programs. So we decided to prioritize other items there.
This is Dan Garrison again. That next one to return Unit C6 at Rocky Reach to service before the end of the year. We had significant supply chain issues associated with COVID, unexpected problems with the repair work. That return to service date was not met, and it is now scheduled for this year.
Commissioners, this is Justin Erickson again. I've got the next three. The first one is agreement on our legislative priorities with the Tri-Commission. That was done at the last meeting of the year on November 30th. That is followed with secured legislative framework for broadband funding in unserved areas. We've been very engaged in that effort and have applied for funding and continue to evaluate opportunities on an ongoing basis. And lastly, secure likelihood of clean energy fund or carbon revenue distribution in Chelan County. That effort is also ongoing as we stay engaged in the rulemaking process through the Clean Energy Transformation Act.
Commissioners, I have the next several. The first two relate to the regional water. As members of the committee, work through the year to work through issues and communicate any concerns or challenges. And secondly, was the second source. We're continuing to evaluate down in South County for a surface water treatment that will be a feasibility for this year. And the following one is on the fiber expansion. You heard the report last board meeting about the areas we expanded into, although we did not meet the overall targets that were set for the year.
Sure, so I have the next four. First one is finalize site suitability and engage with Chelan County on a potential Malaga Park. We did provide a board update on December 20th and had Chelan County participate in that, so you're up to speed with where we are with the Malaga Park. We continue to be engaged with the county, and we'll have more information for you later this year in terms of where we might be headed with that project and if that early action might fully be realized. Next one, Rocky Reach construction, substantial completion of CM22 and CM24 buildings. This is at Rocky Reach. We did miss the target of 12-1, but did get certificates of occupancy from the county in late December. So overall, good news in terms of ongoing progress with our facilities projects. Directly underneath that item is service center construction and the top out, completing the top of the structure for Building A, and that was completed on schedule. And then finally, implement alternative contracting and delivery methodologies. So when we use alternative contracting methodologies, there's a process that we have to go through with the state to seek approval, and we have to prove that we have the capacity to undertake that more complicated activity. There is a process that one can go through to get certified so that you do not need pre-approval from the state. We have considered going through that process, but we and have considered going through that in 2021. However, as some of our projects were delayed somewhat because of COVID and other reasons, we determined that we really need to get a couple of these projects 100% complete, really digest the lessons learned internally before we go to the state and seek that certification. So it's something that's still on our radar, but we probably won't proceed with that until 2023.
This is Dan Garrison again, line 17A. Pleased to report that ahead of schedule, the Chelan Mansion line was completed in the fourth quarter.
And Commissioners Johnsville, I have the next couple. We had a goal of 2 miles of underground cable replacement. We fell short. We were at 1.61, although we did install a lot of duct and vault systems for future conversion, so we're set up to move forward. And the next one, we did go after our tree trimming and pruning cycle. We had a pretty aggressive goal, and that was completed in quarter four.
This is Dan Garrison again, line 21A, executing 80% of our capital plans and schedule within budget. This is one of those fantastic finishes, a fourth quarter recovery, and we met our target and exceeded it by expending 82% of our expected budget.
And this is John. I have the next one. In utility services, we had a little different story. We were pretty well on track, but quarter four we fell short of meeting the budget 80%.
And in district services, we were shy of 80% in quarter two and quarter three, but were able to pull ahead and meet that goal by fourth quarter.
Hello, Commissioners. Rosario Nystrom, Managing Director of Human Resources. I have the next one. We had a goal to partner with WAPUTA to provide input into the legislative process, and not only were we able to do that in many topics that are vital for employees in the district. To give you some examples, we were able to provide input on the long-term care and then also on the EPOA.
Commissioners, I have the next several. The first one is concerning temperature TMDL issuance by EPA. We have an internal team that's been really active in that. We've had good engagement with the Department of Ecology. We are not at a point yet where we are under an implementation or compliance plan because we're waiting for ecology to act in a more final way. So we just continue to be engaged with them and with our partners in other utility districts. And so we'll be ready to proceed as required in 2022. And next, participate in the public review process and obtain a final rule change for the Chelan River. This is our use attainability analysis and changing the water quality standard. This is another project that we've been very engaged with on with the state and with federal and with EPA. And we are also under their time frame for this process. Most recently, they asked us to assist with the biological evaluation, and we did provide some technical resources to assist with that. So hopefully later this year we'll get some good news that that final change has been approved and adopted. Next up, implement water rights assessment and protection strategies. 2021 was another very active year, and pleased to report that we made strong progress. And that has turned blue.
Sean Smith here. The DC fast charging rate, as you are aware, we did start that process at the board, but it took a few board meetings to get through all the comments, but we're successful on the last board meeting to get that passed. I've got the next couple here. These are all actively participate in electric market development. As you know, it's really starting to heat up here. And so throughout the year, all those three areas have gone blue. First one was file comments with three proceedings on the hydropower, high priority for hydropower, which we did. Next was the PGP evaluation, assessing the impacts of hydro on a Western interconnection, Western market. You saw the results of that completed product at the end of December. And then finally there, participating in resource adequacy in the California markets. Here on CETA, what's happened is we are still participating, so we didn't reach that goal because CETA and the Department of Commerce are still working through their rules. So we are still actively engaged in that process as it proceeds. It doesn't provide necessarily the exact rules we want, so we're still working hard on that. Next, GM approval of real-time service agreement. Based on priorities, we decided just to extend that agreement 1 year instead of going for a longer-term agreement at the time. We did implement our long-term marketing strategy through PRMC, which you've seen some of the results with already, and still working through that, but, you know, have started the approved plan. We haven't completed a large load, retail load options yet, although we are in discussions with large retail customers. And finally, we did implement all the Alcoa contracts, meeting all contractual requirements for last year.
Good morning, Commissioners. Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. I have the next items at the bottom of page 14. In 4B, C, and D, during the fourth quarter, we completed our five-year business planning process with a draft plan presented to the board in October and then finalized at the end of that month. And then we used that final five-year plan to peel out 2022 for our one-year 2022 budget, which was approved by the board on December 6th.
This is Dan Garrison again. For our annual operating expenses, we were able to complete our target by getting 92.6% of our spending completed in fourth quarter.
All right. I've got the next couple. We were able to review our contracting processing surveys and implement opportunities for improvement that we do that on a continual basis. And 2021 was we did meet our goal and timeframes associated therewith. And then physical asset protections, we did our ongoing threat vulnerability assessments. And out of that comes project priorities and enhancements that we can make. And those were also completed on schedule.
Commissioners, John again, top page 17. I have the action under maintain rate policy efforts throughout the year. That's been completed. You'll recall the most significant event this past year was the implementation of the electric system improvement charge.
This is Kirk. I've got the next four. The first one is leading the bi-monthly cybersecurity briefings. Those are done by Steve and completed throughout the year. The next one was associated with GridX planning. That was to plan for the nationwide GridX exercise in November, and that was completed upon the exercise. And then we, of course, participated in the exercise in November. And then the last item there was to perform lessons learned exercise and identify action items for continuous improvement in our cybersecurity capability. And that was completed as well.
This is Dan Garrison. The next item right after what Kirk just reported to was we did implement the C2M2 priorities in fourth quarter.
Commissioners, Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber Telecom. I have the next two. So we completed our C2M2 priority metrics and hitting the objectives for both the fiber and telecom group. We did delay our triannual best practices audit on our fiber to the home system for a couple of reasons. One was we did a substantial upgrade to the network in 2021, and as a result of that, we wanted to delay that annual triannual audit for a later date once we have the new system put in place. And also, we brought in a dedicated cybersecurity expert into the group, so we're going to put that person on that particular project to make sure that when we go through the audit, we get the best that we can out of it.
Good morning, Commissioners. Ian Fitzgerald, Chief Technology Officer. I have the next three. The first one is implement the C2M priorities by the end of quarter four. We completed that actually early in the year, and it helped extend out our strategy on cybersecurity and initiate a significant number of process changes. The second thing was to conduct an annual network penetration test. This is by an outside auditor. That audit has been completed with a good review, and it's now leading into improvements again in cybersecurity. And finally, the last thing is conduct annual awareness training on a yearly basis. We did complete that. However, we've identified that once a year is probably not enough based on the risk it provides. So we are actually now doing this every quarter, but with smaller and shorter training environments to keep the culture of cybersecurity within the district up continuously throughout the year.
Commissioners, Rosario again. One goal that we had was to develop an implementation and negotiation strategy, and we were able to do that and do it successfully.
Good morning, Commissioners. Rhonda Wilkinson, Director of Safety and HPI. I have the next three. So the very first one is the senior team site visits. We were shy of our goal by one, but the senior management team did complete 31 of the 32 safety site visits. Under 1D, under the learning teams, we did increase the number of the learning teams we conducted from last year, but we were short of our goal by one, completing four of the five. Then the third one is the OSHA recordable cases. So in fourth quarter, there were an additional seven injuries that were added. There were no additional lost time injuries, but there was one restricted work case. And then we ended up the year with 30 OSHA recordables, which just put us over our target.
I have the next one, and it was to perform target hiring based on prioritized needs and make job offers by December 1st for 85% of new positions that were approved to fill before September 1. Not only were we able to meet these goals, but we, instead of doing 85, we ended up being able to get 100% of the new positions. I also have the next one, which is identify and initiate group job groups which maximize FTEs impacted per development plan, and we were able to meet that goal. It's complete. The next one was to develop the five-year implementation plan for the leadership development program. We have been able to develop a plan, and we're in the process of reviewing and finalizing details with Kirk for implementation. And plan and implement two all-leadership team meetings for spring and fall. We were able to do to complete the goal by hosting one meeting in March and another one in October. For the next three, the initiatives for diversity, equity, and inclusion, we were granted a variance due to the high recruitment needs that we had. And so for those, I think that's something that we have to continue working on that, on those three goals for the next year, for 2022.
This is Rhonda Wilkinson again. I have the next two. So the first one is the ARC Flash labeling and training for the water wastewater group. The training and the ARC Flash assessments were completed by the target date at 12-1, but the equipment labeling was completed after the target date. And the next one is the district-wide ARC Flash training. So the competent person training began in 2021, but with COVID and smaller classroom sizes, we're needing to continue to push that training into 2022.
This is Kirk. The next one is our commitment to bring forward Cycle of Personal Ownership nominees and award winners every month, and that was completed in December.
Good morning, Commissioners. Eric Walquist, General Counsel. Continue to advance our governance, risk, and compliance effort in the past year. The two targets that were met in the past year were for completing conversion of compliance tracker to the GRC system and the extension of that system to the health and safety.
Commissioners, John again, I have the next two. They revolve around the AMI project. One was just the project plan that was completed after the deadline, but it's in place now. And the next one was the completing the field location and design of the collectors that are out in the field. So that's been completed.
This is Dan Garrison again. The phase one of the outage management system was turned over to operations, completed in December of last year.
Commissioners, Ian Fitzgerald again. The first item here on 5B is make a decision to continue the GIS process improvement. That study was completed, and I've made a decision that it's in the best interest of the district to move forward and start to continue a strategy on GIS for the phase two portion of this. For C, team distribution and development vegetation management application. This application was actually developed based off of priority and other resources requirements to finalize the product. We have not deployed it into production yet, but the product is actually completed and ready for final review. 6A, execute a vendor contract for customer engagement portal. This was not completed. This is a project that really requires the AMI system to be in place, and as a result, it's been put into a different order of slot. We are planning on doing stakeholder engagement analysis and selection of the customer engagement platform by the end of this year and start developing next year on this product. 6B, the advanced mobile app current. This project basically got deprioritized based off a number of major strategic projects we were working on in the AMI, OMS, C2M environments. And based on capacity, we do not have a chance to get to this project.
And this is Kelly. I'm next up with our Business Intelligence Data Analytics District-Wide Program, with 7B being completed for the year of steps related to Utilities Analytics Implementation Plan. Steps for 2021 were completed, but really the important emphasis on this one is that we continue into 2022 to work with IT and utility services to determine what are our best analytical tools of choice. So work around these types of things will continue into 2022. And then the next item was near complete, but we missed the deadline with our final milestone, now to be completed in 2022. We do have a functioning go-to portal for business intelligence and data analytics on the program content and contact, but we need to finish our analytic community definitional work. And this one is delayed because of resource constraints with the open vacancy we have in data analytics. We have a technical analyst position that's one of those, falls into the category when those hard-to-recruit positions. And it's been open for over 10 months now. So we'll continue to work on that to try to attract that right expert to supplement our resources.
Commissioners, Ian Fitzgerald again. This is dealing with 9D, completing the phase three of Microsoft Teams rollout. Phase three includes incorporating Microsoft Teams as a soft phone or a phone functionality. The more I looked into this, I realized that the original scope was just to allow for us to call, make and receive calls within Teams. I have since actually met stakeholders and learned that the scope should be expanded to include potentially groups or reporting on all calls and potentially giving the option to record phone calls like we can with the current hard phone functionality. So due to this, we've expanded the scope, and we are working and will complete this project this year with that expanded scope.
And I've got the last two here on marketing the solar program to customers. We've decided to shift gears and make that a solar and battery storage program. With the advent of a lot of solar on the grid, midday pricing doesn't really make sense to incentivize people to do, so they need to we want to include a battery component in that. And then finally, the low income, engaging the stakeholders for the low income program, we did engage through our low income advisory group, and we're moving forward with our program in the 2022.
And commissioners, that's the last item, and I would just like to comment on how proud I am of our employees. This is a very long list of items, and it by no means reflects all the things that are happening around the district. There's a number of items, efforts, and initiatives that aren't even on this list, and for this group to have gotten 50+% of them done on schedule, and then I look at the lower number there, 71% on the bottom, that of the things that were on this list that we wanted to get done in 2021, 71% of those got done. Some of them not all on schedule, but they got done in the year we planned to, or they are on track. So just a tremendous effort by our employees. With that, any questions or comments?
Commissioners? And Kirk, how does that number compare to previous years?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to ask me that. I don't have that number off the top of my head. How about if I get it at lunch?
Yeah, you can get back to me on that. That'd be great. Okay. It is almost noon, and Tracy, I don't believe you can do this in 3 minutes. Commissioners and Tracy and Kirk, are we okay to move this till after lunch?
Yes, we are. On
legislative update?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, then we will, what's the correct term I'm looking for? We're going to be back at 1 o'clock.
We're going to recess.
Recess and reconvene.
Recess and reconvene. Thank you very much. We are recessed.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the February 7th business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices that you have today. Stay muted on your screen. We welcome the public's input at our meeting and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or electronically and let us know that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. So at this time, Kirk, I'll turn it back over to you so that we can finish up the legislative update.
Okay. We've got Tracy Yunt and Sean Seaman on the line with Dave Arbaugh as a guest going over the legislative update. And I think Sean needs to go to his virtual open house after this presentation, so we'll try not to keep him from that.
Well, I guess I'm going to – that's my cue to get started. And I guess the question is, do we need to do any more introduction for Dave, or is he – well known amongst the group.
Go ahead and introduce him, Sean.
Well known.
Well, I was hoping David would introduce himself. Dave Arbaugh. It's a pleasure to have you joining us here today. Dave is our contract lobbyist in Olympia. He's been doing this role for us since 1997, right, Dave?
That's right.
So quite a long time. I can't emphasize the value that Dave brings to our effort, and this role that and what we're talking about today would be much more difficult if we didn't have Dave with his expertise, his demeanor, his connections to help us. So, Dave, I thank you so much, especially for the support you've given me over the last few years.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure.
So with that, I'll just jump into the next slide, please, Rebecca. Simple, here we are today. This is just, again, an update on the 2022 session. Talk about some bills of interest and points of interest. And again, just information today, there's no decisions of the board. Next slide, please. Here we are, 29 day of the 60-day session. I'm glad Dave's math and my math correlate. He said 31 days ago, and I said day 629, so we're good. February 3rd was the Committee of Origin Policy Cutoff date last week. Today is the policy bills getting out of fiscal committees. There was a couple bills of note that were up for executive action today at 10, and perhaps Dave might be able to update those for us if he has any information. February 15th is when bills have to get out of the House of Origin, and then we anticipate ending on time on March 10th. So happy to say we're still on track here. Next slide, please. We've been talking about budget issues. We still don't have much more information on any federal funding allocations from the different federal dollars for coronavirus and infrastructure. But the budget issues are going to start ramping up now that we're getting through the policy discussions. One thing we have continued to talk about is the $100 million that is in the governor's budget that was to help utilities, as for gas, electric, water, wastewater utilities, to help with customer arrearages due to the pandemic. I just got some feedback, but I guess it's gone now. Unfortunately, it's not. Can we get people to mute, or I'm not sure where that's
coming
from.
It's coming from Neil, it looks like.
So anyway, I'll keep going. One thing that was interesting on this $100 million, we as utilities know there's more. There's a greater arrearage, over $200 million, $236 plus, I think, on the electric side, somewhere in that range. The utilities are trying to get better information. Where are we currently with the pandemic arrearages? And then if need be, try and see if we can increase those levels. There seems to be mixed support. Some legislators think there could be support for more money, and others think there may be a challenge to even get the money that has been allocated. So more information on that as we get into the budget discussions. We've talked about broadband funding, nothing new on that front as well. And as we just discussed, the budget discussions are going to ramp up now that we've gotten to the policy cutoffs. And then this is a year for transportation budgets, a strong effort to get one out this year. So there's been considerable effort on that. And perhaps we have some more information. Dave might have some new information for that, if possible, if we have time. Next slide, please. These are still our top legislative priorities, 5803, the wildfire liability. It has gone through many changes since we spoke even last time. Some forms the utilities did not like at all, other forms that we thought were better. And eventually we were able to work successfully with the sponsor to get the language that we think is all we can live with that. It was an executive session this morning in Ways and Means. Dave, did they pass that out today?
So I've been keeping an eye on that, and I don't think they've taken that one up yet. But this committee will go into the late afternoon or evening with the list of bills they have. So I'm sure it'll happen.
All indications are that the sponsor wants to see this bill get through. We anticipate it will get exec'd out today. The water power license fee, this is, again, remember the fees we pay to Ecology that are shared by Ecology and WDF for the Department of Fish and Wildlife based on our three hydro projects. And this bill was to eliminate the sunset, the opportunity to review and have conversations with the legislature and Ecology and DFW in this case. Utilities were unanimous in the pushback not to have it sunset, and it did pass out a bill with the sunset, but there were conversations with the sponsor, and we believe we will at least get a sunset date restored to that. Again, there's waiting to see your actions on that. I'm just going to lump the salmon protection and restoration bills into one general discussion. The reason I'm happy to say 1838 and 5727 are now dead is because we saw some significant problems with these bills, as did many other sectors of the economy in the state. So those two bills did not go anywhere. But coming in behind that, I jumped down to the bottom, 1117 last year was the net ecological gains bill, which we had concerns about. And it seems to pick up some steam afterwards. And so this could be a vehicle for getting to some of the issues that the proponents for salmon recovery want to see to occur in the state and using 1117 as the vehicle to do that. 1653 has changed as well. It used to be more about improving statewide coordination, and it was that when I wrote this slide, and at least that's what I recall. The bill itself has been thinned down to what just creates a salmon advisory cabinet. Again, this whole effort is to try and get the state to get more, to ramp up their efforts to do more for salmon protection and restoration. And then I included HB 1717 in here because this was part of just getting more tribal participation in the local planning under the GMA, so they could have some more impact or more input into the comprehensive planning and the elements within the comprehensive plans in the county and city level. The 5744 was the tax deferral and credit for clean technology. It's been referred to Ways and Means. We're waiting to see how that one goes. We support that bill. And its companion bill doesn't look like it's going to move, and 5744 will be the vehicle for that program going forward. Next slide, please. On the energy issues, the target electrification of buildings, this is the one that would, in part, give PUDs direct authority to basically convert fuel sources, gas or natural gas, to electric sources and other appliances such as water heaters as well. So 1767 is still moving forward, and companion bill looks like it's dead for the session. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the buildings, this is, would be to try and put some performance standards into buildings that are between 20,000 and 50,000 square feet. The legislature passed a building performance standard for buildings 50,000 square feet and above, and this is sort of working towards that same goal. Again, this is part of the governor's plan, broader plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the state, and this is just part of that suite of actions. The community solar bill 1814, we're pretty neutral on this bill. The main intent of this bill, again, is to allow a venue for low-income customers to have access to solar programs in the state. And I included the blockchain work group, even though we haven't talked much about it. This bill first came to light a couple years ago. But this is basically a group that we get together, but includes a member from WAPUTA to talk about what are the opportunities and implications for blockchain, and what can we do in the state to promote some aspects of this technology. Next slide, please. The digital equity bill, 1723, is just waiting to get through rules. The next one, 1673, is the public works. Changes some aspects of the public works boards, their grants and loans, just sort of some technical fixes, a few changes. But one of the things I thought was interesting in this is that it eliminates the need that was put into the public works grant process for broadband a couple years ago, that the UTC would do a technical review, but this bill would eliminate that technical review by UTC. The CURB bills, the Community Economic Revitalization Board, those two bills are still moving forward. It's just sort of, I guess the way I would characterize this, it just sort of, I'd say solidifies, maybe not the right term, but sort of extends the authority of CURB, gives them a little more longevity, I think. 5715 was a simple bill to just align the definitions of broadband within the different bills and now make it 100 by 100 up by 20 down. Bob, I hope I got that right, versus 25 by 3, which is in some of the bills right now, some of the statutes, excuse me. And the next slide, please. Human resources, this information has been in the news quite a bit. This was the two bills related to the long-term care program. The 1732 delays the implementation of that. It went into effect immediately upon the governor's signature on the 27th, and 1733 makes some changes to some of the concerns that existed with that bill, and that one won't go into effect, though, until June 8th. The last bill I have on issues, 1684, this consideration of fluoridation of public water systems. This doesn't require fluoridation. It just requires some studying of fluoridation during certain aspects of, say, capital planning or other planning with water systems. was heard on the 5th of schedule for executive action today as well. I am happy to say 5732 and the green roofs and solar requirements bill died. It was a good intention as far as more carbon reduction, but it was a bill that needed a lot of work. I didn't think they could possibly get to the corrections they would have needed to make this work for utilities in particular. It would have required a lot of solar. Best way I could say, a building like Stamelt, one of those large warehouses, would have had to have had a certain percentage of that with solar and green roofs had this bill gone forward. Think about a large flat roof like that with a certain percentage. Any percentage would be a lot on a warehouse around here. 1753, it's a tribal consultation on the Climate Commitment Act. It in part restores some of the actions the Governor Inslee vetoed from the Climate Commitment Act from a couple years ago when he vetoed a section of the tribal consultation. So this addresses a lot of those concerns that the tribal parties had and the government, Governor Inslee and his cabinet had. And the next slide, please. Well, I didn't put this in there. And that is me, I'll have to say. I don't even know what year that is. That's pretty early. I'm thinking that's back in 1991, from what I can tell. Any questions other than about when I shaved my mustache off? Dave, do you have anything to add I should ask you real quick?
Yeah, I do. I just want to take a point of personal privilege here and tell you, Sean, that I have thoroughly enjoyed working with you. You've been a great resource, and I know you've got things in place to make this as seamless a transition as possible, but I'm going to miss working with you.
Well, thank you, Dave. I have to say, hopefully my comments reflect that I, too, will miss the opportunities you provide in working with you on a personal note as well. It's always been a pleasure.
So maybe I'll take a quick second just to quickly chat about Sean and also the transition. First about the transition. So a couple days, Sean's last day from now. And so Dave and I will work through the rest of this legislative session together and be back a couple of times for updates. So that's the plan. We are in the middle of the hiring process, but that person won't be in place nor up to speed, obviously, in time. So we'll work through that. I did also want to share just a moment. You know, Sean's career started in 1991, Energy Services. Then in 96, moved over to Customer Service, and I thought it was interesting. He and Jim White really began and developed the SNAP program. I don't know if you all knew that. Then moved to Environmental Resources, and managed fish and wildlife, real estate, compliance departments, and began implementation of the habitat conservation plans, which, as you know, are a cornerstone to our natural resource programs. Then fast forward to 2013, moving to external affairs, and it's become more apparent to me how valuable Sean's background is, the diverse background he has at the district, and bringing that to external affairs. Working with Dave, it's been a real value for the district. Sean's done a great job working on climate change resiliency, member of the Washington Invasive Species Council. And we sat in here one day several years ago and had a discussion when Sean brought up the idea of credit for early action that eventually Suzanne brought across the finish line. So, you know, I think Sean is a team player. Easy to work with, really provided meaningful contributions to the district. And one of the things he said that really embodies Sean's work is, one of my primary roles is to help those around me succeed and grow. So, Sean, thank you. Congratulations on your 31 years career here at the district. And I will walk down the hall and hand this to you. Kirk, I don't know if this is the first one you've signed, but it's got to be one of the first. Congratulations, Sean, and thank you again.
Thank you, Tracy. I appreciate those notes and those. It's been a long time, it's been 30 years.
That's great. Congratulations, yep. Sean. Commissioners, any comments? We kind of roasted Sean a meeting early, but you never can get enough roasting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't jump in on that, but I'm not going to pass the day up. With a crazy summary there of your career and your contributions, I think, Sean, it's perfectly acceptable today to ask for a 5-year extension of your contract with a raise. And know that you would be welcome. Thank you so much for what you've done and how you've done it.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Randy?
So, Sean, you know, what I'm going to really miss, we've missed it the last 2 years, but one of the things that I always incredibly valued about what you brought to the table in my role as a commissioner is I could count on you being beside me or right behind me in Olympia at all of those meetings and giving that update of what we're doing as a district, what we need to do as a district. I knew I would be on solid ground with our district needs with you there beside me or behind me, and I'm going to miss you. So I look forward to you hearing all the good things about your retirement at some point. But, assuming we get back to Olympia next year, I'm going to miss you there.
Well, I'm sure they're going to have somebody that will fill those shoes for it, but I really do appreciate your recognition of that, Commissioner. Thank you.
All right. Well, I guess it's time to move on. And Sean,
let me see if
we'll see you at Dan's Market.
I don't know if I've seen you there yet, Commissioner. Maybe now that I'm retired, I'll be seeing you there. Thursday morning, senior mornings, I'll be there with you.
Yeah.
All right, thank you all very much.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Yes, Gary.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Sean, I just want to say quickly that I will miss you as well. You've been a big help for a guy who came in not knowing anything. You have helped me to avoid landmines and to find the final destination. You are definitely going to be missed. Thank you, my friend, for all you have done.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate the comments, too.
All right. Well, lots of applause there. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate the update and best of luck with your retirement. And, you know, I just a quick story. I came to know Sean back in the early 2000s, working at volunteering up here in the school district with our facility planning, and he was marvelous and helped us learn from past mistakes. And if you look around in Leavenworth, Sean's fingerprints are all over. Probably not literally, but Sean's fingerprints are all over these beautiful new buildings we have up here in Leavenworth. So thanks to him for all of his not only work at the PUD, but his public service as a PUD employee, but just volunteering his time was commendable. So best of luck, Sean.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. And I'm also happy to say we're seeing similar success with the ski club and the ski hill and what's been going on up there. And it's a big group. I have a passion for that, but we bring people in that help. And we drug a couple people in, as you recall, from this district here, Jennifer Pickle and Ian Adams. We got into the school board and the school conversations too, and their insights, having raised in that area, were so invaluable for that. And really happy to see all those schools. Every time I drive by, it's like, yes, that we took care of that for 50 years.
Yeah.
That's good.
You bet.
All right, thank you.
You bet. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us, including resolution number 9. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I would so move.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Against? Motion is carried. Okay. Kirk, would you like to present the regular agenda resolutions 10, 11, and 12?
Yes, thank you. Agenda item number 10 is a resolution adopting regulatory accounting for actuarial changes to pension expense. And with us is Amy Smith. We're not able to hear you, Amy.
Sorry about that.
There we go.
Okay. Good afternoon. I'm Amy Smith, External Financial Reporting Program Manager. Because you as a governing board established rates that are designed to recover costs of providing services, the district qualifies for the application of regulatory accounting, which allows us to defer certain expenses revenues in the financial statements to match how they're reflected in our rates. One of the requirements of adopting regulatory accounting is to get board approval for each type of district activity for which it's applied. Over the past 10 years, the board has approved resolutions for regulatory accounting for hedging and derivative instruments, significant contributions in aid of construction, conservation expenditures, swap termination payments, debt issuance costs, investment fair value changes, and investment in non-owned assets. This actuarial changes to pension expense is the eighth type of activity for which we're recommending the use of regulatory accounting. To give a little background, prior to 2015, the accounting for our FERS pension plans was very simple. We paid the required contributions and recorded them as expense. In 2015, however, GASB, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, issued a new accounting standard that significantly complicates how the accounting for the FERS plans is handled. The new standard requires that the district record its proportional share of the state FERS plans into its financial statements, including any unfunded liability, deferred items, and pension expense, as calculated annually by an actuarial valuation. So at the time of implementation, we expected to have a large initial adjustment where we would pull the unfunded liability onto our books, record the actuarial pension expense each year, and the other deferred items, and that it would be this one-time big adjustment, and then annually after that, there would be small adjustments to incorporate changes in the actuarial valuation. In reality, however, we've seen very volatile changes in the actuarial valuation from year to year. For example, in the last 5 years, we've seen our net pension liability go from approximately $50 million to now we actually have a net pension asset of about $62 million. That's a swing of almost $112 million in just 5 years. In 2021, the PERS Plan 2 and 3 went from being underfunded by about $24 million in 2017 to being overfunded in 2021. Of $68 million. So the end of 2021, the entire PERS plan is actually, according to the valuation, overfunded by about $10 billion, and the district share of that $10 billion is $68 million. So we pull that $68 million now onto our books as a pension asset, and then PERS Plan 1 is still underfunded at the state level by about $1 billion, and so the district does still have about a $6.6 million liability. The net of those two being the $62 million pension asset. The changes in liability also translate to large fluctuations to the actuarially determined pension expense that we're required to record on our income statement. And recording that income statement results in unexpected impacts to our operating results each year. We don't actually receive the updated actuarial evaluations from the Department of Retirement Systems until very late in the year. So those aren't able to be included in forecasts or our cost of service rate analysis. Given the unexpected volatility in these valuations, we're proposing that we go back to recording the actual cash contributions as expense, which is consistent with how it's treated for the district cost of service analysis rate calculation. To accomplish this, this resolution authorizes the use of regulatory accounting in accordance with GASB Statement 62 to defer those actuarial changes in pension expense. The difference between the actuarial calculation and the actual contributions will then be deferred to the balance sheet and adjusted each year as updated valuations are received from the Department of Retirement Systems. So that would keep the changes just on the balance sheet, no impact to our income statement, just recording the cash contributions we're making to PERS. It would have no impact to our forecasted cash or those actual contributions. This practice is supported by our external auditors and was discussed with the audit committee recently with no concerns. Upon board approval, this accounting will be reflected in our financial results and be fully disclosed and transparent in our footnote disclosures. Adopting regulatory accounting for these actuarial changes in pension expense will result in more meaningful financial results and better support the district's rate-setting process. Are there any questions regarding this treatment?
I have one.
Okay.
I'm just curious. For lack of better words, the whiplash performance of the funds going up and down, driven primarily by stock market performance or a change in actuarial tables, or do you know?
Well, from the information we receive, we can tell that the bulk of the change is due to the projected investment performance versus the actual investment performance. So they were obviously projecting much lower investment returns than they actually received. There's also a portion of the change, smaller, but some due to changes in assumptions, and then the actual experience compared to what the expected experience was, which would be how many people are participating, age of retirement, those sorts of assumptions.
And
so the bulk of it is due to and longevity. Yep. Yeah.
Thank you. That's a fascinating story, how that changes.
Yes, and yeah, it's just kind of a surprise every year we get it and see what it's going to be. So,
Amy, this is Gary Arsenault. I do have a question as well. Has there been a projection done that if the estimated returns for negative for a period of time, what impact that might have? Would there be, number one, a shortfall, obviously, in the estimate, but where would the money come from to make up the shortage if that kind of a market did appear?
So we aren't privy to any of those forecasts or assumptions at this time, but it is possible that it can swing the other direction. And what if without regulatory accounting, we would have big expenses running through our income statement that were unplanned and unexpected. So this will kind of eliminate that risk. But, you know, going into this in 2015, the plan did have large underfunded liabilities. And so I think most states do. I think it's unusual that we now have an asset. And I think given the long-term nature of those plans, they handle it. There wouldn't be any huge action taking in any one year because they're, you know, projected out over such a long period of time that it would be a matter of, you know, tweaking contribution rates over time, that sort of thing. PERS Plan 1 is still underfunded by about $1 billion. And as you know, there's not very many participants still actively working in that. And so a very large chunk of the PERS 2 and 3 contribution, the percentage that the district and both the employee and district have to contribute is actually going to fund the PERS Plan 1 underfunded liability. So that is how they handled the PERS 1 shortfall, was to assess PERS 2 and 3.
Thank you. So the you said it was 20, how much that we're going to bring back in? 26 million?
It's
from
your... So this year, if we implement regulatory accounting, the pension expense will actually be zero, which runs through our operating costs. We will be putting the $62 million pension asset on our books as an asset. And in conjunction with this, there will be a one-time transition to regulatory accounting. There will be about a $26 million credit that will hit the income statement this year, but it will be down, called out below the line in a, as a special item because it's unusual in nature. So that will be very transparent and disclosed as to what it is in our financial statements as well. So that does actually have a very big impact on the district's net change in position this year, but it's much more transparent than when we run it through operating expenses through pension expense. And after 2021,
all that will appear on the bottom line this year?
$26 million will, yes. Yep.
Not this year.
No. That goes on the balance sheet, so that never hits our earnings, our change in net position. That will just sit on the balance sheet. It shows as an asset. And that will fluctuate over time.
Thank you.
Amy, I think this is a great thing that you're doing. I really applaud going to this type of accounting. I just had some questions as to where that $26 million would show up. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. You're on mute, Commissioner McKenna.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do we want to make motions on each one of these resolutions or do them all together?
I thought we'd do them all together, but it's your choice if you want to do it separately.
We'll do it all together then. Perfect. Thank you again, Amy.
Thank you.
Okay, back to you, Kirk.
Okay, next item on the agenda item number 11, a resolution authorizing the general manager of the district to execute service agreements with McMillan LLC, doing business as McMillan Jacobs Associates of Boise, Idaho, and Hatch Associates Consultants Incorporated of Seattle, Washington, for professional engineering services for the Rock Island Spillway Gate Handling Improvements Project. And with me, we have Brett Bickford.
Good afternoon. I'm Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management. So why two consultants to help us with this project? So over the past several years, we've been evaluating different ways to improve our safety, our resiliency, our reliability, and ability to reduce the time that we can get to different levels of spill at Rock Island. And through all those different items, we've identified five different concepts that we think that if we could advance, we could be able to achieve those four different objectives. We want to use two firms because we want to cast a wide net to get as many different ideas that we can to solve these objectives. So these two contracts would first have the two firms come up with at least two concepts for five different objectives. And then the best of those concepts, we would advance and have them perform up to 30% design. And the reason for that is so that we can confirm that those different concepts could be feasibly constructed, but actually achieve the objectives of making improvements that we would like to see. It could be that one of the firms doesn't get selected to have that many things going forward, but the full dollar value, if they both came up with two objectives, times five is 10, and then they advance those, it could be as much as $600,000 per firm. And so we'll be kicking off the project, if this is approved, later this month. And we hope to have the engineering completed by the third quarter. Are there any questions?
Commissioners, anything? All right. Brent, thank you very much. And by the way, congratulations on your new appointment.
Oh, thank you.
We're all excited for you, so congratulations.
Yeah, me too. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Kurt?
Next item Number 12, a resolution approving a second addendum to temporary water right mitigation agreement between the regional water system members and Crown Columbia Water Resources, LLC. Ron Slaybaugh is presenting.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Ron Slaybaugh, Water and Wastewater Manager. The regional water system entered into the original agreement with Crown Columbia back in 2016, and it essentially agreed to allow Crown to market the excess water rights that Regional had acquired from the Pioneer Water Users Association in 2012 for lease for temporary use. Crown was not successful in finding any uses for that water right until last year, 2021, and they found a use down near the Port of Walla Walla, an organization called Granite Farm, as an agricultural use, in order to authorize that use addendum number one to that water rights mitigation agreement was created, wherein Crown would make that water right available to Granite through the year 2032, and it was the entire consumptive portion of that water right in return for a payment of just over $200,000 per year to Regional. Now, one provision for that agreement was that Crown needed to obtain from the Department of Ecology what's referred to as a water budget neutral water right. Otherwise, that First Amendment would terminate. Unfortunately, Crown was not successful in obtaining that water budget neutral water right from Ecology. So the purpose of this addendum number two is to extend the addendum one, authorize Crown to continue to make that water right available to Granite Farms and to make that payment to Regional for just over $200,000. Any questions?
I'm not seeing any questions, Brett. Thank you very much for the information and the update on that. Commissioners, we have three resolutions. Do I have a motion for 10, 11, and 12?
I would move approval of resolutions 10, 11, and 12.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
It's been second.
I'll second.
Those in favor of those three resolutions signify approval by saying aye.
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 Against? Motion passes. We are on to commission travel. Is Lisa Sanders?
We've got manager items.
Oh, man, I just skipped right over. Oh, I did. Sorry. Kurt, thanks. You could have taken that personally. But, go ahead.
It just shows where he falls in the pecking order.
No problem. I just have one item. It's an informational item on outreach for North Shore Substation. With me is Gary Rice and Jenna Rom.
Thank you, Kirk. This is Gary Rice. I'm a project manager in engineering and project management, and Jenna's also here to help describe a little bit of where we've been with outreach and where we are now, and then I will finish up with telling you what we have planned next. Jenna, do you want to go ahead and get started?
Sure thing. Go ahead and go to the next slide. So just a little recap on the outreach that we've been doing in the design phase of the substation project. As you all know, the siting process was a pretty long one for this particular substation, and we've remained committed to keeping stakeholders informed and involved along the way as we now move into design. Last year, a lot of the design that we were working on was sort of more focused on the footprint or the orientation of the substation and sort of the pieces that go inside the fence, which didn't have as much impact externally. So we didn't do a ton of outreach last year just based on the type of stuff we were working on. But we did do a survey of the nearby neighbors where we put flags up on the corners of where the fence line is supposed to be and sent a survey around to see if people could see it from anywhere on their property. And we got a decent number of responses to that. We also held a drop-in session back in September where we sort of gave a status update on where we were at, went over some of the results of that flag survey, and just generally fielded some questions and talked about next steps. We gave a similar update on COSI at that time. And then just on an ongoing basis throughout the year, we've been sending regular email updates to anyone who's subscribed to our listserv, which I think has a little over 100 people on it now, and postcards and other things just to keep people in the loop on our progress so far. Go ahead and go to the next slide. But now that we're here in 2022, we're kind of going to hit the road with a little bit more hands-on public outreach on the design phase. So we've got some milestones coming up in the next couple of months where we're going to really dig into the stakeholders' values for the aesthetic design, taking into consideration things we heard back in the siting process and also things we've heard along the way since then. And we've hired a landscape architect who is helping us develop roughly three design alternatives to look at with stakeholders and kind of get a feel for what things that they like or are gravitating towards, which things they maybe don't like or different things they might want to see. And also as a part of that, going through a viewshed analysis of sort of where you might be able to see pieces of the substation based on where a property is located. We're going to present all of this information to stakeholders on February 16th, and that's when we're hoping to get a lot of feedback from the public on this design process, and then we'll take that feedback and incorporate it into the development of a preferred design, which will also be presented back to stakeholders. Go ahead and go to the next slide. So some key dates for our next steps. We're working on the internal review of some of this design content now and over the next week. And as you can see today, I'm giving this board update to you. And then February 16th, that's the big milestone. We've got our public meeting where we're going to talk to stakeholders about design and get some of that feedback. Sometime in March, we plan to present the preferred design, which we will develop based on that feedback, to both the public and back to you. And then we've got some other milestones coming up that I'm going to let Gary cover.
Yeah, we will have a final slide here to show. But basically what we're doing is we're working with that view shed that we have, and we want to develop different lines of sight. And once we've made it through the outreach portion and we do have a landscape design that we're happy with, we'll submit the conditional use permit. We're hoping to do that at the end of March, and then we will be able to bid the project. And if all goes well, we want to do a contract award in July and have construction start in late August and hopefully have at least some of the equipment foundations poured and ready to set equipment on in September and October, because we have our first major purchase, which is already completed, it's under design right now, is the transformer, and it's scheduled to arrive at the end of October or early in November. So what you're looking at right now is some of the preliminary work done by SCJ Alliance, who's the landscape architect that's helping us on this project. The red box in the center is our five-acre parcel that we purchased for building the substation. From the first slide, it showed an orchard, and we're down in a bit of a valley to get down to that red box that you see. And the surrounding land, the roadway systems that you see are Boyd Road and then Henderson Road that comes up and leads down into our substation site. In order to do a more thorough analysis for the architectural design, SCJ Alliance preferred to do a viewshed mapping, and what that does is that takes the nearby geology and the contour lines, and it develops a viewshed from where you can be on, in the surrounding terrain and look back at our substation and whether or not you can see it. So this is the first step of building that model. It's not complete yet, but the dark brown that you see, if you were standing anywhere in those areas, you would be able to look down toward our substation, and you would be able to see the items down on the ground and also the items up in the air. As you move away and the viewshed turns a little more yellow, that represents that you can only see a few of the items that are in the air. So it's basically kind of like a topographic map or a heat map that shows you which areas will actually be able to see the substation. To give you an idea of distance, the first dotted radius that you see is a quarter mile away, and the second one is a half mile away. So this work is nearly complete. The next step, and we've actually seen it in this last week, was we're going to create lines of sight, three or four lines of sight. A couple of them will probably be in the Chelan Hills development, looking at our substation, and some coming from the north and others coming from the west. And what that'll do for us is once this is built, we'll actually, with the computer, we'll be able to build the substation. And then along those lines of sight, we'll actually be able to show how much of the substation you can see. That's an important next step in then deciding what kind of landscaping we'll incorporate into our design. So we're right there at that stage right now where we've developed the lines of sight, and in the next couple of weeks, SCJ Alliance will propose different types of landscaping that we can use or landscape features. This will be a little bit different than what we're used to doing at our substations because the Chelan site is more of a territorial view, longer distance views back towards the substation. What we'll do is we'll see if there's opportunities to use some of the existing features that we may have, existing trees, pine trees and things like that, and maybe augment and add some of that to it. And all of our work may not be right up against the substation. We may actually try to shield from a distance away or come up with some sort of landscaping features where we can perhaps draw your eye away from the substation rather than do a complete shielding like we've done if you're in a more populated area. So over the next couple of weeks, we should be getting some of the information back from that analysis and have about, as Jenna said, maybe three alternatives that we can present to the public and see what they think of the different concepts that SCJ has helped us come up with. And it is our hope to be back in the end of March to be able to present this also to the board with a selected alternative for landscape design.
Gary,
questions?
That's a pretty fascinating process. I think community members are going to really appreciate that level of effort and expertise to offset that line of sight. So, Jenna and Gary, I think that's great. Fascinating. Commissioners, anything else? Go ahead, Gary.
Oh, I was just going to say that we're pretty excited about this because this is really a level of detail that we haven't done in the past. And coming out of outreach, we were trying to listen to the customers and be able to respond with something that would meet their needs.
Steve, if I may, thank you guys for the attention to detail on this. As you well know, this was a bit of an arduous process getting to where we are. And there was a commitment made to the people in the neighborhood that we would be responsive in the landscaping and be inclusive with them. And I appreciate you following through on our commitment, and this is a good thing. So thanks.
All right. Well, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's the end of manager items.
Okay. Thanks, Kirk. Lisa Sanders,
I'm here.
With us?
Yep.
There you go, Lisa.
So,
what do you have for us?
Well, we have your February WAPUTA meetings virtually attended by all of you, the 16th through 18th. We have Commissioner Arsenault traveling to Washington, D.C. for the APPA Legislative Rally, February 28 to March 2. We have a March WAPUTA meetings coming up. I believe those will be all virtual unless someone plans on attending in person. Is that no? Okay. I believe Commissioner Congdon will participate in the WAPUTA Water Committee meeting on March 24th. And starting in April, Commissioner Arsenault will attend the Waputo meetings in person. I'm working on those reservations right now. And Commissioner Arsenault, if you don't mind, I'm going to set up a reward account for you so that they have all your information in one place. Make it easier to quicker for reservations and check-in and such.
That's fine.
Okay. We have...
No, that's fine, Lisa. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Commissioner McKenna with Energy Northwest in April. Commissioner Arsenault will participate in the May telecom workshop. And then we're up to... does anyone plan to attend the NWPPA annual conference in Coeur d'Alene, May 22 to 25?
No.
No.
Okay. Commissioner Arsenault, I have a note that you plan to attend. Is that still the case?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
I will attend, yes.
Okay.
Lisa Dennis, NWPPA, most likely not.
Okay. And Commissioner McKenna said no. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Would you like to continue? Do you have any changes?
I think we're probably far enough ahead.
Okay. Let me know if you have questions or if I can help in any way.
Very good. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Commissioner items. We'll start with item A, Tri-Commission meeting. Would someone like to make a motion on this, on our meeting date?
I would move to set a special meeting Tuesday, March 29, 2022, at 1 p.m. to be held virtually for the purpose of holding Tri-Commission meeting. Virtual meeting information will be posted on the PUD website.
Second.
We have a motion and seconded. Although, any comment on that? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Any other commission items? Kirk, follow-up on delegation of action items from previous board meeting. Do we have anything?
Yeah, we had one from the last board meeting. It was to update the board balance scorecard association representative list, and Rebecca did that on the same day, on January 24th. And then we had a new one today, which was just the question you asked Commissioner McKenna about the results of the district performance plan, and I sent that to you all just as a comparison of the percentage of completed on track, completed or on track from year to year. 2019 was 69%, 2020 was 56%, and this year was 71%.
Great. So in a COVID year, we've made some progress. That's great.
Yeah, and I think the most telling one was the number of items that were completed on schedule. Went from 32% in 2020 to 51% in 2021.
Very good. Well, pass my our appreciation on to the management team for that good work and good numbers. Thank you very much. At this time, I will open up the lines for additional public comment. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item presented today, but we provide this time at the end for additional comments or questions related to matters that are not on the agenda. Do we have anybody that wishes to address the commission? Hearing none, do we have any other matters of general business by anyone as necessarily come before the commission today.
Commissioner McKenna, just one more. We have the questions from the Confluence Parkway discussion this morning that we'll follow up on as well as a new action item.
Okay. All right. We will be moving into an executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation, to which the district or its board is likely to become a party and or legal risk as authorized by the RCWs, to plan the strategy or position to be taken during the course of collective bargaining as authorized by the RCW, and to evaluate the qualifications of an applicant for public employment also by RCW. So we are adjourned.
Commissioner, let's – sorry, this is Eric. Can we tag a time onto that, 90 minutes?
Yes, please.
Thanks.
We are coming out of executive session. It's Friday. We're coming out of executive session. It is February 7, 2022. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.